Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Happy Friday, everybody. I know a lot of you out there ready to do the TGIF dance. Well, to those of you who decided that this show was special enough for you to spend your Fridays with me, thank you and God bless you very much. Now, tonight, before I get started, I'm going to have a couple of extra shout-outs that I want to give today. And the first is going to be off to LaShonda and Marlon Mosley out in Flint, Michigan. Happy 17th anniversary to you, my two homies. You guys are the bomb. We have been friends since 2009, and you guys are the perfect example and my little fantasy couple for long-term love, especially in the black race. You guys are the bomb. You're always laughing. You're always making us laugh. You guys are great supporters to each other. So, you know, hats off and raising my glass to you. I want to give a shout out to the Real World Black News and Discussions group because they have been an epitome of support to this show and to pre-broadcast topic questions. They have been giving us topic ideas. They have been giving great insight. And there's a couple of special people in that group that I want to say specific thank yous to. Let's start with Mark and Lou Mason. I want to thank David Billings. David Billings is not an active talker on the panel, but he's definitely a behind-the-scenes staunch supporter. So I want to thank you very much for that, Dave. You've kind of been somebody I've been waiting to make sure isn't on the listener panel. So I want to thank you, Linda Miller, Gwen, Shamika, Kirsten. You guys have been great and constant with talking. And I also want to thank on Facebook, Lorraine Benjamin. She has been one very spiritual supporter, and she has definitely made sure that everybody stays encouraged when things get rough. So thank you, guys. Now to our standards. We have to go to Mr. Barry Mason. He is formerly of 98.7 KISS FM Radio in New York City. He is currently with isolradio.com. And you can hear Barry do the best of his magic and music on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m. and on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. When he's not doing that, he is out there giving the city of New York the best of R&B events all over the venues, giving us fun stuff, giving us great performances. Thank you, Barry, for being a great entertainer, a great DJ, and definitely a great person. To my team, Lady Diamond and Lane Yeves, Monster Miles, and to DJ Dome Wrecker Rodney Williams, you guys have been great people behind the scenes, up front, on the panel. You've been wonderful. I want to thank Stephanie Hammond to let Marcia Morgan for allowing us to be one of their sponsors for the past Tuesday's Comedy Cares event for healthcare. Been wonderful. I want to thank every single one of you who have now brought up our total listenership to 14,454 people. I want to thank you very much for that. All right. We have a special guest tonight who I should have thanked when I thanked all the specifics in the Real World Blackness and Discussion group. Carl Tone Jones. He is a professor in Arkham College in Pennsylvania, out in Philly. And he was an active panelist for the last couple of times that we had our victimization three-part series. One of the things that he brought up is what prompted tonight's topic. It's something that applies to us. It's very important. Now, although we are speaking tonight about black empowerment and the way that it's been stagnated based on things that we ourselves are doing or not doing, depending on how you see it, and he will be with us a little bit later on the panel, and one of the things that we are going to be speaking on is how a lot of these news articles that you have seen and heard, one is definitely the Zimmerman trial. We've seen other things going on in the news. How is it that we as a race, as people, that are not paying attention to a lot of things that may seem small but are actually big things hiding in plain sight, how is it that it's stopping us from empowering ourselves? Not so much what the outside is doing, but what we ourselves are not paying attention to be able to fight back. So you guys all know how this goes. We are going to go into our early break. When we get back, okay, we are going to start this discussion. I want to hear from all of you tonight, as many of you that are out there not partying, that are spending the time with us. 347-327-9967. Once again, I want to thank those people out there in the real world, News and Discussions Group, Linda Miller, David Billings, Gwen. I want to thank Mark. I want to thank Carl, definitely, as soon as he gets on here. Hopefully he heard me. I want to thank Deacon Betty Williams, who will not be able to be with us tonight because he has something to take care of. And I want to thank every one of you that have made this where it's at today. So I'm going to go out with a very special song by one of OTE's new music artists showcase entries. Ice Meese, his name is, out there in California. Young man that is also trying to promote black empowerment through his messages. He has a video out that is called Occupy, based on the Occupy movement out in San Francisco and out here in New York, which gives tribute and honor to Trayvon Martin, as well as all the other situations politically and socially that have affected us. When we get back, we'll get this topic started, okay? So we'll be back here in 5.5 minutes. Here's Ice Meese with Occupy.
Just to make back it. See, I voted for a change and it ain't happened. Still can't get a job, so I'm back at it. I guess this is where we came to. Where senators get paid more than teachers do. They taxing every item when we buying food. And they still don't give it back to the schools. But they give it to the 1%. Cause we give it to them banks when we paying rent. Working hard in the end ain't making sense. So we gotta sell dope, that's the way it is.
We in this world full of hatred, like there's no need for the love. Bills on our tables, jobs ain't calling. My people fed up, trying to find a way to resolve it. And it's crazy how they keep trying to tell us to blame the White House. We don't do something about it now, then it's lights out. People starving, they can't even feed their kids. Media lying to us, they deceiving us with fears. Damn, and not to say I'm trying to take us out. And I want to say we survive, but I can't escape my doubt. That's why we gotta rise as one, come together and unify. Either we try or we done. We the 99%, so majority rules. If you only look at the news, you got the stories confused. Yeah, we really out here striving for a better way. A better life, a better pay. And it's a shame that they just wanna see us perish. Watch us all ride away in embarrassment. It's appearance, so much cheddar in this world. Wonder why we can't share. If you view it how I view it, they motive is transparent. They want control, money, get power without respect. And they don't care who they kill, long as they get in the check. So I'm speaking for the people worse off than I.
We occupy 99 just out here striving, and the ones on the hill just smiling. It ain't right, so we fight. Damn strong, cause it's alright. We the people and we out here struggling.
The good old days. Then he asked me, when was the good old days? We always been paycheck to paycheck, struggling and hustling, just making sure the fam set. They giving everybody freaking bailouts. Then my city went bankrupt and hellbound. Money went down, so the crime went up. Now I'm trying to aspire till my time is up. The people got sick and tired of being hopeless, so we set up shop, demonstrated and posted. Tear gas, my eyes still open, train still rolling, full speed smoking. Shut ports down, show the world no joking. Just trying to get that word out, but we need one voice to organize the noise. This book can happen when you give us no
occupy. 99 just out here striving, and the ones on the hill just smiling. It ain't right, so we fight. Damn strong, cause it's alright. We the people and we out here striving.
You're listening to On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. That was Ice Knees. He's an up-and-coming hip-hop artist out there in California. He was brought to me by the moderator of the Real World Black News and Discussions group. And this young man, when I spoke to him, and he was on the panel for our Saturday showcase, he has such intense and wonderfully mature and intriguing views about the world and about the message that he wants to put forth in his music. And I found it something that this show is constantly trying to do, and we are definitely showcasing him. So tonight's guest is no different from where we're trying to go. All of you that have been actively involved with us and helping to spread the word, you all know what we are trying to do. So one of the things that is on the table in this mission with us is trying to empower minority communities, youth definitely, and definitely trying to give something back to this economy so that we all have a fair bite at the American dream once again. And tonight's guest is Professor Carlton Jones from Philadelphia, PA, which when I bring him in, I'm going to allow him to give all the descriptions of what he's doing, what it's about, who he is, and hopefully we all could leave from here more informed and a little bit better than we came in. Okay, so bringing him in just a minute, please bear with me. Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you, Katie. Once again, definitely appreciate you. Appreciate your platform, and I'm just very thankful to be here this evening.
And I'm thankful to have you, sir, because definitely something that you are doing is, I think, is worth it. It's absolutely wonderful, and you know, it's something that we need. We need a difference. There's too much negative going on right now, and too many people have their eyes closed where it needs to be open to make a difference. So kindly tell everybody what you're here for and who you are.
Okay. Well, like you said, my name is Professor Carlton Jones, right out of Philadelphia, born and raised in North Philly. One of the things that I like to do is go to schools and talk to our youth about our value system. One of the things that we need to readdress is the system, that a system of morality when it comes to how we deal with one another. One of my projects was the recent DVD that I just did at Black and Nobel on August 10th, titled "What About Us? What the Verdict Meant for Us?" And it was in response to the Trayvon Martin murder case, with George Zimmerman being on trial. One of the things that I noticed about that trial is that it never seemed as though Zimmerman was actually the one on trial. So I want to talk about that when we get a chance. Also talk about how that particular case, the implications for the black community at large, how it was, we saw the reinvocation of Jim Crow. The system of white supremacy was unveiled once again. And basically just talk about the implications, what that case actually means for the community at large. There was some precedent that was set there, And that's one of the things that I want to get into this evening.
Okay, well, you definitely have the platform to do that. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. One of the things I agreed with you, because I actually took the time out to look at your lecture DVD that's on YouTube. And listeners, those of you that are interested, when the show goes off the air, it will be posted to the On the Edge Facebook page so that you can access it and see it. One of the things that has caused when you and I were doing the pre-interview talk that you brought up, and it really made me think. We constantly have this talk that we say, we sort of attack each other, you know, within ourselves. We are the first people to not like having certain words said to us, yet we say it to ourselves, with it being supposedly like a little hip-hop spin on it or a cultural thing among us, which I don't agree with because I think the word is just bad enough as it is. The way that we choose certain fashions that we want to make our own, yet it's a bad image to ourselves because it came from some place that people have debates and controversy about. But when you brought up the Zimmerman trial, and to take it away from the platform or the way that it's been spoken about, we all know about the racism that's involved with it. We know that it was a very unjust verdict. Pretty much we all went through it knowing that it was bought and paid for, and I'll say that as my opinion to the day that I die. But one of the things you brought up that was a very important factor was it wasn't that Zimmerman was on trial. It was Rachel Jonteel's lack of the speech impediments that she had because she's not not a English person. It was Trayvon's, you know, typical teenage behavior, which had absolutely nothing to do with the behavior that he had displayed in that gated community that caused his death. Okay, but yet this is what the defense was able to put on trial, meaning that was more the focus. And before I turn this back over to you, one of the things that came up when I posted the pre-broadcast out the question, two very important responses came back. One was from Mark, where he said that it shows. Let me make sure that I say this right because I don't want to I don't want to misquote him. But it pretty much, yeah, but that's what he said. It shows that the worth of what a black life is really worth. And my response, in turn, is it also shows that the American justice system, for me, is for sale to the highest bidder, and the absolution in those laws, what's not supposed to be able to be negotiated or compromised, pretty much was, especially when there's a black defendant, a black witness, or a black victim involved.
We have to look at the system in itself, and the system in itself, for years, going back to slavery, going back to the Black Codes, going back to the slave codes, going back to Jim Crow, we were never allowed the opportunity to be legally represented. If you go back to the original Constitution, you know, you go back to the Three-Fifths Amendment law. And we were never considered American citizens. We are the only people in this country to be here involuntarily. We didn't have the history of immigration. In fact, our history was stripped from us. It was taken from us. And even in those instances, the black community still found ways to succeed, even in dealing with this system. And let's just call it what it is. It's the system of white supremacy. The black community was still able to succeed and thrive, and the most promising time for the black community was actually the conclusion of the Civil War during Reconstruction. We saw the greatest black gains from the Reconstruction era up until the 1920s while you had the Harlem Renaissance. You saw the greatest black gains. The black community was thriving in this system. We had over a 50% growth in literacy rate from the time of Civil War to the year 1900. So the black community was thriving at that time. And even in those times, the system of white supremacy would unveil its ugly head once again and tear down the black community. Every movement the black community has tried to make and go forth in this country, even as we tried to move and work within the system of white supremacy, when we were successful, new rules were created. This 1877 compromise where Northern troops were removed from the South. You know, The history books talk about the upward social migration, upward northern migration of the old sharecroppers. It doesn't tell the story about how those people were moved off their land, how they were held at gunpoint and made to leave their land and property sometimes in the middle of the night, how children had to run through the woods with their families and hide for their lives. The majority of students today still don't know about the Black Wall Street and what happened in Tulsa in 1921. We saw Rosewood, and it was depicted as a fictional fact, a fictional tale, when in reality, the story of Rosewood, the only fiction about the tale, about the movie, was that we had a hero in that movie that rode in on a shining, like a shining knight on a horse. So when we look at all of these different things and all these different factions, we were never given the opportunity to live that American dream. So we are still looked at, and that was one of the most significant. We as a people were never seen as equals to the white community. And the trial emphasized that a black person walking home from the store still did not have the right to live. You know, when you look back at what happened that night, you had George Zimmerman profile this young man, go against the suggestions of the police dispatcher and follow this young man in the pouring rain. Well, who does that? And then not only follow this young man, when he finally tracks him down, his story doesn't necessarily corroborate with the actual facts of the crime scene, but he's never investigated. He didn't have any blood work drawn. His background was never checked. Trayvon Martin was assumed the person in the wrong. He was the assumed aggressor, although he was running home in the rain. How are you the aggressor if you're just walking home in the rain? The excuse was, well, he should have just gone in the house. Well, whose rights was he violating by standing outside? Whose rights were he infringing upon when he was just standing outside? So we have to look at all these different things. And then when you go back to the history of Sanford, there's a book out there, people, we all need to read, and it's called The Sundown Towns. And these are towns that were throughout the country. There are towns in every state, but throughout the country, where if you were black, you needed to be indoors by sundown, or you needed to be out of town by sundown. And do you know the original sundown town was Sanford, Florida? Also, the original Dred Scott case was based, it wasn't necessarily the state of Michigan versus Dred Scott, it was the state of Florida. Sanford County, I believe, versus Dred Scott. That was the case. So we're talking about a history where blacks in this country have been told over and over again, you will not be a part of the system of white supremacy. We do not want you here. Even the richest, most famous members of our community still cannot have a seat at the table of white supremacy. You look at Jay-Z. He got what I like to call his N-word wake-up call several occasions where he was cast out as a minority owner of the Brooklyn Nets, when he was cast out again as a football agent. There was a system that were put in place on the dime. You know, you have Oprah Winfrey. She's one of the richest people in the world. Yet still, she's told that she can't be in certain stores and things of that nature. So even, you know, you have Bill Cosby, and I have a lot of respect for our elder Bill Cosby, but I also have some harsh words for him because he wasn't even allowed to buy a radio, a television network, and he had the money, he had the backing. Yet and still, he still criticizes people within the communities that he grew up in, when he doesn't do anything for those communities. And that's something else I talk about too, is the fact that we have a boule class system within our community that we need to address. But going back to what you were saying about us having the having the right to live, our lives are not valued. in the system of white supremacy. The system of white supremacy, I mean, look at the precedent. Since Trayvon Martin was killed, you had about five or six blacks who had been just shot, and the only excuse was, well, they were black. That was it. You know, there was nothing. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, you brought something up, and when you were speaking on when you were speaking in your lecture, you brought up the 911 tapes, which is something that when we were covering the Zimmerman trial here on the show, I brought up, and a lot of people really didn't get until I brought it up, was every month, every 30 days on the nose, like a billing cycle, this man called 911 using the same one time that a string of burglaries, according to him, had taken place in this community. And he... every single time that this man called, he called about a suspicious black character. It was never that he just saw a suspicious person who could have been Puerto Rican, who could have been Asian, who could have been Italian. It was always a black person. He always saw a black person. Okay? And that already was something that the prosecutors really were trying to do their jobs, could have made a pattern of. Because frankly, with me, if there was a way... this really sounded more like a premeditated murder than it did a self-defense, or least of all self-defense. But one of the things that did come up was, that he called every 30 days. Nobody really tried to investigate Zimmerman, even when he was arrested at the initial beginning of the crime scene. No one really tried to investigate. Say that again?
We have to look at that, too. I mean, this guy called 45 times. He made 45 phone calls. And 44 of them, he described black males, as you stated, some as young as 8 years old.
Wow.
Now, when you talk about his history, one of the things I get into is his family history in the DVD. And I talk about, because, you know, his brother, Robert Zimmerman, has been going around talking about how their family couldn't be racist, their mother's Afro-Peruvian. Now you have his cousin, who wasn't allowed to testify, tell stories about how she sat around the dinner table every night, and his mother, all she could do is say negative things about black people. Now this Afro-Peruvian mother didn't like black people. Now you have George Zimmerman also, who molested his cousin, as the information further came out. Now you have, in addition to that, you have his brother. Now, if you follow his brother on Twitter, every other day his brother is posting some racist remarks and racist articles on Twitter, blasting black people. You look at his father. His father put a book on Amazon for $3.99, and all he did was trash the black community, you know, trying to call the black community racist. So you look at all of these different things, the fact that he had a coworker that said he was a bully, that he was never allowed to testify. And then you look at the actual case itself, how the prosecution never wanted to prosecute him, how the arresting officer never wanted to arrest him, the lead investigator, how the lead investigator became the number one, became the star witness for the defense. He was the prosecutor's witness, but he became the star witness for the defense. He stated himself that he believed George Zimmerman was telling him the truth when he said he didn't, when he gave his account of what happened that night, although George Zimmerman changed his account like three different times on tape. They allowed George Zimmerman to testify. A prosecution should never allow somebody to testify by playing their recordings or playing a tape of them giving their account of the story without having the opportunity to cross-examine. That happened during the case. We have to look at all these different factors. The fact that there was a possibility that two black members of the jury pool were not allowed to move down in the process of in the jury selection process. The fact that they chose an all-white female jury. The fact that they invoked Jim Crow fears in the jury with the testimony of one of the witnesses. When she describes herself as being in the bedroom, hiding, holding her children while two black males were trying to break into her home, how George Zimmerman came running to the rescue and was there to comfort her and things of that nature. We have to talk about the fact that in this struggle, how all of a sudden nobody saw anything, but then at the trial, you know, we have distinctive remarks about who was on top, who was on bottom, how the defense emulated the crime scene by stating that Trayvon Martin was on top, slamming the dowel, the dummy of the dowel, back and forth. And then the prosecution goes and does the exact same action in front of the jury panel, never challenging that it could have been George Zimmerman. How I called on August 10th. Now, this is documented because the DVD was filmed on August 10th. And even before that, if you go back in some of my accounts on social media, be it Facebook, Twitter, what have you, I went forth and stated that the trial was, this was a fake trial, that this was rigged. I compared it to the movie Sleepers over and over and over. And now what do you have? You have a medical examiner coming out suing the prosecution, saying they suppressed his evidence, that they wouldn't allow him to tell the stories, the facts that he claims based on his account of the evidence that Trayvon Martin couldn't have never been on top, that Trayvon Martin was found, that Trayvon Martin was shot in the back. You know, I brought this information out back then, that this trial was fixed, that this trial was fixed. And the medical examiner goes further into talking about how this whole thing is coerced. And I brought this trial up because the significance of this entire trial is this trial set a precedent for the black community. I mean, now you have Jordan Davis, whose trial is going on now. Or he's in the process, his killer is in the process of being tried right now. He's talking about he was standing his ground. You have Everett Gantz, who was shot in the face when the police officer showed up at the crime scene. The man who shot him was sitting at home cooking dinner, or eating dinner, and said, all I did was shoot a nigger. You have Darius Sims, who was shot in the chest, taking the trash out. In front of his mother, this is quote on tape, this happened in Milwaukee. You have Roy Middleton, who was also killed, who was shot up going into his car in his mother's driveway. So, and that's not even talking about the young man that was just shot up not too long ago when he was running away from a car accident. His car had careened off the road. He was trying to get help, and he's running to the police officers after, I guess, someone called the police saying a burglar was trying to break into their house. Now, think about this for a second. If I'm a burglar, would I be breaking into your house, making all types of noise, frantically screaming help? So, you know, you have all these things going on. You have several other cases that I can go down. I mean, it's about 10 cases, and I'm not even talking about the police shootings that have shown a rise in the last year or so since this case had made publicity. The problem is, as a black community, we need to recognize what that means. That means we are targets. Now, there's always been this thing called hard kills and soft kills. It's a term and methodology used by the financial elite, and we know they go by several different names. But these are people who have think tanks in a society. And one of the things is, after the Civil War, there was this question that was raised. The question, we have what was called the black problem. What do we do with the blacks now since they can no longer be used for free labor? And one of the solutions was to cull us, to have us culled. It was eugenics. The term, actual term is eugenics, means thinning out the herd. Basically, it's a form in the system of killing people off. And through scientific means and methods. So one of the creations, one of the brainchilds of this eugenics operation was the killings through vaccines. Another was with abortions. And now you have all these other things that are coming up that people should be paying attention to. I mean, you know, the government turned a blind eye to when all those hundreds of black communities were burned down and angry white mobs destroyed and ran them out of town. There's a very good movie out right now, and if anybody has cable, there's I believe you can watch it on you may be able to watch it on demand on any cable channels, but it's called Banished. And in this movie, it talks about how it shows examples of how blacks were moved out of their communities, how they were, you know, Whites were lined up in the streets, angry white mobs would march down the streets with guns and shooting them at random, shooting up entire houses, communities, throwing fireballs, and then stealing all their land, stealing all their businesses, stealing whatever riches they occurred, whatever wealth they occurred. Then we cannot try to financially integrate with a community that wants to see us dead. I'm sorry.
I said that's true. Before you continue, I do have a panelist that's been waiting, and I need to bring them in. Just give me a minute, okay?
No, that's fine. That's fine.
Welcome to the show, Cole. Are you on the air?
Hey, you, Katie. This is Rod calling in.
Hi, Rod. How are you?
You're talking about Trayvon, huh?
Well, we're not really speaking on Trayvon per se, but we're using his case as, a big, huge example of what tonight's topic is about. And
okay.
That is pretty much that with us sort of being willfully ignorant to things that are going on around us, hiding in plain sight, how is it stopping the black community from being able to empower themselves and how
mm-hmm.
we can do that? We're speaking with Professor Carlton Jones. He is a professor in Arkham College in Philadelphia, and he is speaking on this because he does the lectures on this. Now, I do have another panelist as well that wants to come in, so just give me 1 second to bring
mm-hmm.
him in too as well. Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Mark. How are you doing?
Hello, Mark. How are you? Welcome to the panel. Okay. Yes.
I'm listening to the show, and I think I'm loving what I'm hearing from Carl, and it sounds like he's done his research on this case, on the Zimmerman case. But one thing I did want to bring up, I watched that trial almost every day. I listened to it while it was going on, and it seemed to me that instead of Zimmerman being on trial, it was actually Trayvon Martin. He was the one being put on trial, a dead boy, teenager. He was actually the one that was on trial. It was like he had to prove his innocence or his right to be walking in the street at nighttime in the rain.
Exactly. I agree with that one. I mean, we took apart all of the rules and the job description of what a, quote, neighborhood watchman was supposed to do. We heard the police practically tell him not to leave. We heard the escalation movement of him leaving his house to get in his car, to cock a gun, to close the door, to follow this man. We heard it. And not that we are, once again, I want to make it clear to the listeners, you may have to think that you have heard about this before, but we are not really speaking on the Zimmerman trial. We are just taking apart the procedures that took place to talk and support our topic tonight, which is pretty much a lot of things that are happening out there are happening straight up. But us as a people, we're constantly just about the grumbling. And that's one thing that gets me big time. Professor, I don't know if you agree with that, but we grumble a lot. We know exactly what we're talking about. There's another panelist coming in. Just give me a second, okay? I'll bring you in just a bit. We grumble, we speak about it, but we do nothing. And we close our eyes to little things. I think Lou Mason, he was on here earlier speaking about, and so did you, Mark. You have brought that up quite a few times, that it's not just about the national election anymore. It's about the little things, the Congress, the councilman in your neighborhood, your local union person. You know, all of these elections happen. These are people that you probably never heard of before until September. Come primaries, everybody is block emailing you. Okay, they know your name personally. They know your email address. They don't know you all damn year, but when it comes down to they want that office position, suddenly they know what you eat for dinner. They know what you don't like about the supermarkets. They want to know what you care about. You know, these are little things. These are the little people that really have the voting power. Now,
no.
I have watched the defense in the Zimmerman trial literally find a loophole in the absolution of our laws in the justice system. They found a way to get around what the solid, non-negotiable parts of the law has been. I saw them making jokes about how they can, well, technically speaking, what this wording means is you're sitting here pussyfooting around with wording of something that has been our Congress, our congressional rights and statutes for years to come since the beginning of time. But because it's Zimmerman, or it's because of this person that it was a black victim, what the hell did it matter that Rachel Johnson couldn't speak proper English? Neither could Zimmerman's mother, but apparently her testimony was great.
No, you bring up some great points, and you know, I'd like to thank all the brothers for joining the panel, especially Mark. Thank you for making this connection happen, brother. You do a lot of good work behind the scenes, and you know, we're going to ride this tide together. You know, that's how we're going to work this out. I definitely agree. Let's go back to a couple of points that you made. First, you talked about the fact that Trayvon Martin was on trial. And I'll take it a step further. It wasn't that just Trayvon Martin was on trial. The young black male was on trial again. And the young black male, the fears of Jim Crow was invoked, where the white community had to protect the white woman. And that was invoked, how Trayvon Martin was this criminal. He was this thug. He was this gangster. And that's how all young black males are. And that was the same type of fear that was invoked when they talked about, when you go back to these towns, and we're talking about going back since lynching, since the Jim Crow era of lynching, and we're talking about how a felonious account of a white woman being assaulted by a black male, and a black male being lynched at the town square, and his genitals being a trophy, and the entire black community had to be held accountable for this. So the entire black communities were destroyed and burned down, and people were moved out off their lands never to come back, and people were murdered in the streets. And we're talking about that being invoked again. That's why I was talking about the precedent that was set with this trial. You know, you have the time is now for us, the black community, to understand that we cannot turn to those, to the purveyors, to those who run this system of white supremacy. We cannot turn to them and to have them defend us. We have to take the initiative. We have to get off of the porch and stop saying somebody help them and be the one that goes down and help them. We have to stop being talkers and start being doers. We need to start work. First of all, the first thing we need to do is to vote with our money. Our money is the primary power that we have. We have an economy that, well, we don't have, excuse me, we have what could be a functioning economy of over $1 trillion that we will steadfastly refuse to incorporate in the term of the group dynamic and group economics. And just think about that for a second, what we could accomplish. Nobody has to be accountable for us because we're not going to stand together. We've been splintered as a community. And as I said before, the system of eugenics, the system of white supremacy, scientifically creates this. They create honorary whites to and different nationalities to always be our opposition. Well, the Asians are doing well. Why isn't the black community doing well? You know, and then we talk about the immigrants from all these different countries. They come in, they do well. Why isn't the black community doing their part? So a lot of this is scientific. And we have to remember that COINTELPRO never stopped. I bring up that during the lecture, how it was ironic that during the Zimmerman trial, the outrage in the black community was quelled with, well, look what's going on in Chicago. The term black-on-black crime was repeated over and over and over. Our black boule class, which is used as a buffering system to buffer the system of white supremacy from actually having to be accountable, because there's always somebody like us that they can use to talk to us about what's wrong with us. You know, so we have to also look at those people and hold them accountable, too. You had Charles Barkley, Bill Cosby. You had, what's the talk show host out there that's always on CNN that's always comparing the black community? What is he from? South Central. Larry Elder. You know, we have people like that who are always used as the mouthpiece for the system of white supremacy to talk us down, to tell us about what we're doing and why we're not succeeding. And so we have so many things that systematically are working against us that, you know, it's no wonder the community is falling apart. Now, we're at currently in the information age now, where people should have
Professor, I need to interrupt you for a minute. I'm sorry. No, you were fine. It's just that there's been a panelist holding, and there's another one that just came in. So hang on 1 second, okay?
Okay, no problem.
Hi, welcome to the show, caller. Thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Gail. Can you hear me?
Hi, Gail. Hang on 1 minute. Let me bring our other panelists in, okay?
All righty.
Hi, welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Gail Birdsong.
Hi, Gail, and hi, the other, both of you, Gail. Okay, so you're Gail Birdsong and the other Gail. Hi. Okay, first, Gail, you first. What do you have to say on what you've heard so far?
Well, actually, I originally called in to comment on the Zimmerman case that I did watch. I think my brother's on here, too, on air, Mark, from The Real News.
Yes. Hello.
I also watched the trial, and there was a very important thing that was left out that came later on. And one of the things, the night that George Zimmerman shot Trayvon Martin, his wife had left him. And they had just gotten into an argument, which I think was a very important fact that was left out of the trial and didn't come out until later on, and she was all over the news.
Right. That's true.
So,
yeah.
And they did mention they fought.
I heard about that, and what it meant was that George Zimmerman initially lied on the first night he was interviewed by the police. It means he lied because he told the police that he was going to the store to get something for his sick wife. That was his story initially. And later on, after the trial is all over with, and now we're at the point where the Zimmermans are getting a divorce, she comes out and says, we were already separated at that time. So, yeah, there were a lot of little lies going on back and forth, and they played their role to the T. And, you know, from what I observed during the trial, it was like Zimmerman knew he was going to get off before the trial was over. It was like it was a done deed already, and they were just going through the motions, basically. That's how I thought.
I agree with that. I mean, think about the fact that, you know, there were a lot of little things that took place from the defensive side that should have been a big thing to address that wasn't. For example, which this one sticks with me all the time, was the daughter of that, the white bald-headed guy with the glasses, defense attorney, that Rick West, I think it was, his daughter got on Instagram and made fun of not just the dead victim, but Rachel Gentile, and put her face on Instagram in the middle of an ice cream cone, saying that my dad, my mom, and I were going out to celebrate Stupidity Week.
Yeah, I saw that.
You know, and that wasn't addressed by this judge or spoken about or whatever, but yet they were busy trying to take apart the fact that somebody had a Twitter account that was a witness on the stand. You understand? Well, you have followers. We just want to make sure there's no conflict. Conflict of what? About this person having followers on Twitter? Because it happened
Well, what you have is the system of white supremacy are the people that purvey this, the ones that are purveying the system, the ones that are upholding this. They are very skilled at playing the game of racial politics. And we are, for the most part, rookies in this game of racial politics. You still have people out there, you know, wanting to go to a march, having protests, but there's no plan, there's no structure. And we, as a people, we accept so many different things, and we don't understand the game of racial politics. We show up to a chess game with a pocket full of checkers. We wear our emotions on our sleeves, and we don't think strategically. We don't think technicalities. We don't think to work behind the scenes. We broadcast our plan. So when we try to address the system of white supremacy, they know they see us coming. They already have their plan, their backup plan, plan B, C, and D, waiting for us because they already know we're coming. We've already announced it to them. So when they do things, they stick together. I made a very big point about this in Facebook and on other social media, other parts of social media that I purvey. And one of the things I stated was that even though I know that there are white people out there that disagree with this verdict, not one white person would make a public stand to state that they disagree with the verdict. My inbox was full of emails and things of that nature from people saying they were so sorry that they didn't agree with the verdict. But when I challenged them to publicly state those claims, they all did not. They all stated that they would refuse to do so because they did not want to take the deal with the backlash of white supremacy. Because white people can catch backlash too now, and they understand that when they get someone turns hit, when the white community turns their back on them, it comes with grave consequences. So we are not going to have any allies in this mess, in this battle. So what, I wrote down a few things that I wanted to that we need to address in this area. We need to be more economically self-sufficient. And it goes back to that group economics thing. We need to focus on supplying our own, buying from our own, and having our money turned over within our community at least 10 times before it leaves. We need to be able to make our money bounce within the community, build up our communities economically. When we build up our communities economically, a lot of different things occur. We, you know, we get better police service because they have to be accountable because we'll be able to amass the means to make somebody pay for being disrespectful or being or doing something criminal towards us. We'll have the grounds to make better school, to have better schools, because our funds will go directly into funding better schools, and the schools will have, the school districts will have something to be accountable for. Also, we'll be able to control our politicians because money talks when you come to, when you talk about elections. So we have to get to a point where we are economically self-sufficient. Now, notice we can't be totally self-sufficient because we don't control the resources, but we need to start somewhere so that we can get to that point where we can start to approach the utility companies, so we can start to approach the farming community and saying, listen, this is what we need, and we're going to take over and do things for us, because there's no accountability for anybody committing a crime towards us.
That's true. I will say that there was something that was brought up in the middle of, you know, the points that you've been making pre-interview, I should say, or pre-broadcast. And I wanted to bring something up with what you just said earlier. You said that when the white people and the Caucasian people were emailing you to say they didn't agree with the verdict because they didn't want to step out and publicly do whatever. Understand, the reverse for us is true. We say a lot on Facebook, we are activists, we are whatever, but not one of us would challenge our own selves to get up and make a stand the right way. Okay, for example, you're speaking about economic powers. The problem with us is that as much as we don't have or we're being suppressed by certain things or are oppressed by other stuff, we can't sacrifice certain things that are not necessarily necessary, if you know what I mean, but it looks good. It gives us some, it feeds some twisted perception that if we have these things, okay, that if we have these things, we're big somehow, and we don't give ourselves the affordability of saying we're going to boycott this particular thing. Because as much as it would look good to have, you know, those jeans from X, Y, and Z company, maybe we should not wear those this week and try buying from this person that week. We do have a hard time sometimes with just going without. In order to make a statement, there was something that a lady on one of my Facebook friends did when this Trayvon Martin trial was going on, and there was a page that was up that was blatantly disrespecting and dishonoring Trayvon Martin and what was going on with the family. And she tried to make a protest to Facebook to get it shut down. She was told that it got to come down, but yet there was a black page on there that apparently they didn't like what these people were seeing that was equivalent to what was being said only from the African-American side of things, and that page got shut down. So it's these are things that don't get fought in the ways that it should be, but everybody's grumbling.
Well, yeah, we're a bunch of, you know, excuse my language, we do a lot of bitching and complaining, but we don't really get up and to the plate when it comes down to it. And I understand why. As much as we want to boast how big and bad and tough we are, when it comes to the system of white supremacy, the black community is scared out of its boots. We're shook when it comes to the system of white community, to white suppression and white supremacy. We're shook. We're terrified of what white folk can do. Take this for instance. If you have a neighborhood bully that's walking around the neighborhood, terrifying the neighborhood, look at how that person responds when a police officer, a white police officer that pulls up next to him, and look at their candor and their demeanor and how they change. Yet and still, this person feels validated by terrorizing the neighborhood. You know, we've taken the slavery off of the plantation and brought it back into our communities. And that's why we have the overseers. The overseers now are our young thugs and drug dealers, because they now they put the fear in the people. You can't cross them. Although they're not doing things they need to do to build the community, you can't cross them because there's a consequence for crossing them. But those same drug dealers, those same thugs and criminals won't go out there and do that in any other community. You know, the funny thing is a white girl could walk through North Philadelphia 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning and not a damn thing would happen to her because of the fear of the retribution that would come down on whoever violated her. And that's just the real. That's just I've seen it. That's just the facts.
If something did happen to her, there would be for high-profile L&I water searches for it to happen. Caller, I see you there. I'll bring you in just a few seconds. But she may have no fear walking because of just what you said. But in the same token, if somebody should have dared to attack this person, there would be such an investigation and such a deep fight to get to the end and make something happen that it's beyond means. You would see high-profile cases talking about all the great things this woman has done or this person has done, all the wonderful moments and tender things she had dreams of doing with her life. They'll have her with her sad eyes and her swollen eye vessels saying things like, all I've ever wanted to do was to help the community, and this thing has terrified my life, and it has destroyed me, and I will never be the same. And you will have everybody with Bleeding Heart America, and guarantee you that community will be right behind her. We'll be right behind her, bringing up all the tender moments, showing her in a picture, hugging her teddy bear or her little puppy to really play on the sympathy of this woman, not realizing that they took that photo away. She might be one of the biggest bar hookers that there is that's out there, you know, partying it up and being on the rodeo and doing all the stuff that happens. Let me bring our panelists in, Paul, and I'll have you continue what we were doing. Okay. Hold on. Welcome to the show, Paul. Are you on the air?
Yes. What's going on? It's your boy Dean from Cali. How you doing?
Hey, Dean. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. You know, just listening to the topic tonight and whatnot. I saw Trayvon picture up there and Zimmerman and whatnot. I'm like, wow, it seemed like it happened so long ago now. But, you know, the stuff is still going on. I just want to say I agree with the brother that was talking earlier in the community and whatnot. You know, about, like, you know, how, you know, we are predators on our own society now, like, because we are housing the oppressor. You know, we see that white people say, well, black life isn't worth anything. So now we ourselves are saying that. So the majority of black people are killed by black people. And you know, and we learn this violence from the oppressor, you know, and stuff like that. So I said the only true thing to heal this as a solution is make killing black people against the law. You know, let's just propose that bill, and that will across the board stop the, you know, like if the police would have had that knowledge and said, well, it's against the law to kill them, they wouldn't have been able to shoot him when that man was knocking on doors and disoriented. We got to shoot him in the leg or something because it's against the law to kill him. So if we really put black people on endangered species list, because look how we treat our dogs. You'll go to jail for 10 years for killing a dog. But you kill a black person, you know, you can go home free and have dinner. So I'm just saying maybe that should be the thing, like, you know, put black people on the endangered species list, you know, and somebody really propose a bill that will at least start a conversation.
Unfortunately, Dean, the way that reality is now, and there's a new panelist coming in. I'll bring you in just a minute, caller. Unfortunately, the first thing that we're going to have to do as the people to get that to happen is to make people even look at it, to consider it, to be passed as a bill. You understand? That's the sad reality of certain things. It's not about, like I said, any racist conspiracy theories. It's just that while there are very many people who no longer believe in the old ways of being, it's just that this goes on. I think there's a group member from the Facebook group that always says that it's no longer that, you know, you can lynch a man in public, but now you could take racism into the world of corporate, where now they have on suit and ties and briefcases. They've traded in their hoods and their burning crosses for that. You know, as much as I always hate to go to that and lean on it, there's more and more evidence of that being the case is true.
My argument is that a black life should be worth more than a dog's life. So if people get in an uproar over a murder of a dog or fighting dogs and want to send a man to jail for years of his life for that, I'm like, you know, what happens to a black life should be worth at least the same as, or if not more, than a dog. And so when I see people getting off for killing black people, that sends a message that it's okay to kill black people. And then you look in Chicago, and you look even the streets of Philly, where they used to call it Killadelphia back in the day. You know, I would say, like, you see what I'm saying? And so, you know, so shout out to the Five Spot, where we used to have music over there on Bank Street. But you know what I mean? But when that white girl walking down the street, when that white girl walking down the street and whatnot, the only reason people wouldn't bother her is because they would have think she was a cop or she was copping.
That's, you know,
that's the only reason my white girl would be on TV at that night, on that street at night like that.
That's true. And one of the things I wanted to point out with what you just said, Dean, is this. Instead of it being that, you know, it should be a law that a black life is worth something, why can't people get to the point of just not thinking black, white, or whatever, and just think of it as it's a life? There's something that was brought up in a previous segment that we did that has nothing to do with race. It has to do with the fact that the fast food workers of America, you know, they get fired for taking leftover food home at night, right? And one of the things that one of the panelists had said, which burns me every day in a way where, you know, it makes me think, is that they'll get fired, labeled a thief, blacklisted from getting a new job for taking home leftover food after serving thousands of strangers and nasty people sometimes a day, right? And this person said they would rather feed the dumpsters to feed the rats than give that to humans who actually could use it. And that is exactly the way it turns out to be with the way the law treats, you know, African Americans. And it's a sad thing
right.
to say. As much as minorities on the whole get, there is a panelist. Let me bring them in.
I would just like to say, this is Gail again. I agree with everyone on this panel, the brother from California. I'm busting at the seams here because I work for the court system here in California. And I just got something. The system is not on our side. We all know that, you know, nationwide.
Right.
And you know, I'm seeing it from another point of view. I got to be careful for what I say here. I've worked for the court for many years, but I
don't
seen
say too much. They know your voice. I'm just saying.
You know. I'm damaged to what I see and how I see that the court system is not for us, and especially not for our black males. I work in traffic court. I see it there, but I also see it, of course, in criminal court. I see it in family court, how they're treated as far as custody cases. And, you know, it just it's so deep, you know. And until a lot of the laws and the system has changed, we don't pretty much have a chance. You know, you win cases in our system nationwide, not just here in California, is if you have money and if you're able to hire an attorney. You know, most
right.
black people convicted of a crime or charged with a crime are assigned a public defender. Well, I happen to have worked with public defenders, and it's an 8-hour job. They work for the state or the county or the courts. You know, they're not hired, so they're not going to take your case to heart, unless it's a high-profile case that the media gets.
They're going to make you try to plead out.
Okay, guys, I have to give the new panelists time a minute, okay? Hi, welcome to the show, Corley. You're on the air.
Good. How you doing?
Hi, who am I speaking with?
This is Brother Larry.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Okay. I'm a first-time caller. I met a sister at Roseland. She got me hooked up. And I was reading the final call, and I saw y'all in the final call. I said, well, I got to get through. So I'm back again. That's what's up. You know, number one, the sister that got shot up in Washington, D.C.?
Yes.
There was a Caucasian man shortly after Barack Obama came to president. He was about 67 years. He approached the White House with a rifle, I think. And he injured one of the police security guards, and he's still alive. Is he not?
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is. But his sister was running away from these snakes. When it comes to, and you were talking about those who tear us down, such as Charles Barkley. I heard he was married to a Caucasian woman. If it be true, I know that most of those our people who are married to the Caucasian people, they hide in the background, and they speak out and tear us down because they rather tear us down and look at their mate and say, why are your people still doing this? You see what I'm saying? I was selling the final car one day, and Rodney King picture was on the front. So this Negro rolled past me in his car and said, get a job. So he didn't know me, so the light caught him, so I jogged down there, and I knocked on his window, asking, was he talking to me? And beside him was sitting a white woman, so he was getting, I don't know what was killing him inside, concerning this case with Rodney King, and that white woman was beside him, you know what I'm saying? And it's strange that we have a problem just sticking up for each other. Even our politicians don't do nothing. Once they get into office, most of them, you don't see them anymore until the next time to register to vote.
Well, we know, and thank you for your input, brother, because you bring up a very powerful point. Two things that you said that resonate with me. One of the things is you're talking about how we don't stick together. And that's why when I talk to students and I identify myself, I let them know that I am unapologetically African. I am an African who was born in America, but I'm unapologetically African.
That's right.
I do this because when I say this, it gives us an identifying something to identify with as a culture, as a people.
Yes, sir.
We don't have that. Based on the system of slavery, based on the corrupt system with Planned Parenthood, the corrupt system with the courts and family courts, which were specifically set up to break up black families.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
We have to find a cause. We have to find a point where we identify as people so that we can have a root cause to join together, and even if we don't agree with one another, we can live in harmony with one another and know that we need to understand the game of racial politics. Understanding the game of racial politics and us being unified as one people. Another thing that you talked about was the fact that our politicians don't support us, and that goes into something that we don't talk about a lot in the community, because it's a little-known group called the Black Roulette. Now, this Black Roulette group is broken down into several segments. You have the educated Black Roulette who are out there, and they're the philosophers. They're the ones who go debating and talking.
Intellectual,
the talk
Cornel
show.
West and Tavis and them.
Right,
yes.
Exactly. Then we have our political class. We have our titles class, the ones that have positions and titles, police chiefs, and you know, then we have the financial class of the Boulay, and all these different groups of the Boulay work to secure the system of white supremacy, and that's why when you have the majority of these cities that are majority black cities, that have majority black city council, that have mayors and things of that nature, we never seen the benefit from them being there. We've
no,
never
sir.
Seen the benefit from the leader, and that's because they are there to keep us down. And that's what we have to recognize, and that's what I'm talking about when I say we have to build within the community, get our group economics together so us grassroots brothers and sisters can get those snakes out of the weeds and get them out of there.
And I want to, if you don't mind me interjecting here a minute, Carl, absolutely on that one. One of the things that I wrote in the segment summary today was this. You know, when we speak about black empowerment, you know, considering what we deal with from society and, of course, you know, through our history, things that affect, it's almost like the things that go with that is like a recipe for disaster in today's society. And one of the things that happens is it's not just what the outsiders do to us. It's what we do to ourselves as well.
Well,
one
see,
of the,
Well, see, one of the things that Kunta Kinte said to the family then that is recognizing us today, he said the people have lost the knowledge of themselves and we don't know who we are. And you got some calling themselves niggas, Negroes, and they got a new name calling themselves dogs, Crips and Bloods. And we are a divided people. Now, I am so desired to start building something in our community. But I think I see that the repercussion, those desert Arabs who got stores in our communities, I bet you in the money when they will pay the punk thugs in our community to do something to either set it on fire or shoot it up. I bet everything in my pocket, sister, and because we need something. We have nothing to offer our children. I'm not dying. I'm living to build something for my children. My children's children, my community, and my people around this—you know what I'm saying—within this, within this United States. That was one of the greatest things talked about on the anniversary of the Million Man March this Sunday. And as I said, y'all was mentioned in the. That's the reason why I'm calling back the second time, because y'all was mentioned in the final call.
Right. You know, there is something that I wanted to bring up, and I think I brought this up to those of you on this panel that have been with me in previous segments. One of the things that I think we make the mistake of doing is this. We have definitely been already under, I guess, a blanket forcing of us thinking outside of ourselves. Like you said, what Kunta Kinte said, that was back in the day where people were literally beating you, ripping you from your families, whipping you in public, being able to burn you, doing all the things they did. But I think that what we do now is everybody is so busy thinking about not being able to do the big grand moves. And understand, change doesn't happen with big grand moves. That's usually what happens that disappears as quickly as you made it big. The thing is the little stuff. Carl, you brought up this, and I think you brought this up in the posting. I don't know if it was you or maybe it was Marco or somebody else in the group, but why not, if you cannot give up the designer thing, why not look for people that are black designers of certain things? And if you don't like the style of that, then you know what? As consumers, go to their suggestion box and tell them what they should change to make it more appealing to the public that they're trying to serve. Why not do it that way?
We can put the onus on black people, but at the end of the day, the prison industrial thing, we talk about that slavery, it's still going. People are still being snatched from their homes every day and whatnot on trumped up charges. Like they being snatched and given 30 year sentences for nonviolent crimes and stuff like that, because the prison industrial system, I can make y'all slaves and work for free, and I can compete with these contracts out there. You know what I mean? So now it's not. Not in America's best interest to solve the black problem. It's black people's best interest to solve the black problem. I'll just say one thing. We only 15% or 30% or whatever of the entire America. So we're not important enough to them to make a difference. Diasporally, all across the world, we outnumber them. But here in America, we are a very small percentage. So it's not in their best interest. And why should we help the black people? Because, they're only a small percentage.
We're not talking them, Dean. We're not talking about them being considering us important or not. I'm talking about the little things we need to do.
Shout out to us saying my name.
There is nothing that we are going to be able to do with things as it is, especially if all we have is grumbling at the mouth on Facebook or in corners or sitting with a drink in front of a liquor store talking about how the government is a mess. Absolutely. We're not going to be able to get a damn thing done that way. And the problem is we're not empowered enough with financial resources or whatever to do.
But who are we
looking
to get empowered from? Allow me to finish.
Dean, allow me to finish, okay? What I was trying to tell you was this. We don't have the money that all these big corporations have. The average African-American doesn't. But you know something? Neither did those people in Montgomery, Alabama, that got off the bus and walked.
When you said economic empowerment, see, we had the resources, but we have to be together to bring it about. When Stephon Marbury had his stores, they was angry at him, so they had to get rid of him. And by getting rid of him, his stores closed down. See, if you would play by their rules, then they'll let you hang around. But when you step off from them, okay, then they're going to put pressure on you.
We remember the Black
you.
Wall Street.
See, once,
but then what
like,
happened?
I was watching, check this out. I was watching Arsenio Hall the other night. He had the brother Fubu on there. And he talks about how he's in China with 100-something stores. You think a white man going to let you put 100-something stores throughout America to money that he wants from us? He's not going to allow it to happen. Unless we can bring it about because we got security, we got police, we got FOI, CIA, we got everybody available to give us security. Once we can do that, then we can come out of her and build on top of her. But as long as we're not looking at that cohesiveness that we do have, which we give to them. I mean, we go to foreign countries to kill for them. So we're fighting for my country.
Okay, but everybody is still talking about the big piece of the pie, which you already know. If we're not allowed to sit at the dinner table, we're not going to
I don't want to sit at the dinner table.
One second.
Yo,
come
by food. I hear you.
Hello?
Yeah,
Hello? Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Just
say
peace.
Okay, thank you.
We
don't want no
A-T-L-L-O. That's a
T-shirt.
I want
something. One second.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much. What's going on? Okay, one second. Let me explain this, okay? This is a panel, and everybody's got to get a chance to speak, and while we're speaking, we don't interrupt, please.
Go ahead. This is your world.
Okay? Now, one of the things is everybody is looking to try to tackle the big piece of everything with little access to certain things. What you're supposed to work with what you have. And work that way. You're talking about the man from Fubu talking about what competition he's in. Okay, well, we already know that that happens. Anybody that wants to open a business now is already going up against people that's been established in the business for years. So what does that mean? You don't try? You don't continue? You don't work with what you have and try to do your best? You're going to be your best promoter because you care more about what you're doing more than anybody on this earth does.
Yes, no doubt.
Yeah, and when you get in the position, I would like to say, when you get in powerful positions as Damon Johns, is that his name, of Fubu, you know, give back to the community, too. Like, for instance, getting back to the court system where, to me, we're done unjustly. If you're an attorney, if you're a black attorney, you know, give some of your time free to some of these cases,
Don't say that F word. They don't
like
that
you got to give that too.
Use a foul language.
That's what
Stephon Marbury missed out on. He didn't come into his community and build a power base there. He went into the Lions Den. You see what I'm saying? McDonald's started on the side street. Now they're all over inside building their den. Stephon Marbury missed out on. He's supposed to deal with the community first, build his power base there, and go out. Then they could have kicked him out of basketball into another country. His business would still be going now. And now today, brother, they're using his same stuff with the same type of money. It's called NBA.com with the same prices, but he's not involved. You see what I'm saying?
I would like to also bring to the conversation that, you know, we can't just dismiss the white people because they have infiltrated. When we got these black businesses or black towns, they sabotage stuff by going to the banks and not giving us these loans. And so they are definitely a part of the conversation. We can try to exclude them all we want, but because of what they did, I'm still for reparations. I'm not about to forgive. And they shut it down. They shut us down. I said that's the black card. Don't pull out the black card. To them, we a card, but you know they still owe me. They still owe my ancestors. If they still got that money, don't sabotage me by not giving me a loan for my business and whatnot, because if they still holding the money, and I'm talking about the diaspora black people, like with the World Bank, they'll let you have your own city, your own island, but you in debt to them. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so start
me
off fair. You know, like, they are always going to be a part of the conversation as long as they have that money. So we can say, yo, have your own this, have your own that, but at the end of the day, you might have you a figurehead because you have to. Who got the money? It's white supremacy. Who got the base? White supremacy.
But I don't worry about that. You see, like I said, if you remember the Black Wall Street. If our soldiers at that time
would have done what they did for the Civil War, and those black soldiers would have said, you would have patrolled that particular community of the Black Wall Street, that Black Wall Street would be successful today. And this is what is missing among us today, that security. You know, we got so much, we patriotic for white America, but we're not patriotic for ourselves. Just like you said, the Negroes and the thugs in the street, they don't mind running down the street shooting up, driving, but so the white man walking in the community, they like wooden soldiers. You see what I'm saying?
Well,
that mindset got to be flipped around. That mindset got to be flipped around.
Let me go to Rod. He's been on the panel.
You know, I've been just sitting here listening and learning and taking notes. And the one thing I always say is the more I learn, the less I know. And it means basically the more I learn I need to learn.
Yes,
and
sir.
And I'm learning a lot tonight. And I love the fact that we're having a scholarship session. And I like to always consider the scholarship session so that we all leave here with tools we need to continue to build. I think one of the things we need to look at is we need to start small. We need to start small within the community, even if it's just sweeping out in front of your house, starting with some civic pride, working on dressing one child at a time. If I see a young man or a young brother or sister walking up the block and they're using foul language, I'm quick with it. Hey, shorty, watch your mouth. Oh, I apologize over here. And if I see somebody throwing trash and say, hey, young brother, you wouldn't do that in front of your house. Let's keep our community clean. And it's one thing at a time. I don't do it in a way that's intimidating or a way that's trying to say that I'm trying to be boisterous about it. I do it in a way that's uplifting so that they understand that there's love in that message.
That's what I be doing when I see young brothers call themselves niggas. And I tell them that you are truly gods in reality, but you will destroy your mind and not know how great it is if you continue to call yourself niggas. And I say to them, most niggas are in jail or dead or do drive-by shooting. And if they were to see you stand outside shooting somebody else and hit you, they would say the niggas shouldn't be there. So don't call yourself. That's one of the first things I start to do within my community with my young fellas. I want them to love and respect themselves.
One of the things I like to do is actually go out and speak to the youth. They have that ancestral fire and spirit in them, and they haven't been taught yet.
No.
They haven't been trained yet on how to be peasant, to be the footstool of white supremacy yet. They haven't been taught that how to. So, you know, that's one of the things I do is I go to the high schools, I go to places where the youth is. I go here in Philadelphia, the Black and Nobel.
Where
they have a lot of the people that to come in. And even there, you know, I got a chance to listen to Brother Polite on Sunday. And his message, he had one quote on there that was powerful. And he said, you know, conformity is the opposite of courage. Well, the opposite of courage is conformity. Meaning, basically, when we shoot each other down, we shoot brothers and sisters down who are trying to make a change, who are trying to step up. It's because the coward in us is afraid to step out on a limb against the system of white supremacy. And believe me, I've seen it. I've seen the backlash from white supremacy from me stepping out and saying things. I've seen the backlash from the white community. It comes in subtle ways. You know, I came home one day and my water was cut off. I said, whoa, how that happened? I didn't even get a bill.
Y'all seen that young girl getting stopped because she bought a $3,500 pocketbook?
Yes,
and they said, is that your real credit card? Under my police officer stopped her, and then they stopped the boy from buying a belt not too long after that.
Yes,
so
sir.
White people are letting you know that they don't see you as you are equals. You know, they teaching our young people now. They done did the civil rights thing. Now they teaching our younger people a lesson, a verbal lesson, saying like, you know, if you walk in with and buy what we buy, you ain't on our same thing. So we gonna always check. You always gonna be suspect to white people and stuff like that. And that's in 2013. So
okay, allow me to interject, please. Dean, you're absolutely right. But once again, this is where we keep stagnating ourselves. We know that this exists.
We didn't do that.
That
white person stopped and did that. We were trying to just go shopping.
Once again, we know that
table. I'm writing that down.
We know that this exists. We know that we're never going to be in their minds equal to them because they got slavery got taken away. Slavery, being able to walk up and douse somebody with a hose is gone. That stuff is gone, but they've filtered it into other things, cutting all the minority economic programs that they need to survive with, making sure we don't get loans from their place that they can help.
And for the purpose of the conversation, can we keep they as white people for this conversation? They didn't want to...
One of the things that we were saying, you know, as it stood was that if we're going to be going up against all of these obstacles, every single one of them. But the whole point is, how do we, what do we do with it? Do we sit there and just give in to the blanket fact that these are things that's been going on? Look, right now they shut our government down for some sort of, you know, cover-up racial situation. They're trying to say it was because Obama wanted to spend federal funds. But it really was that in the midst of that plan, where black poor people are going to get health care on their dime.
Get what
so
they
what
get.
Do we do? Do we still sit there and go, well, no matter what we do, it's going to be the same? Or do we say somebody has to take a stand, even if we do have to take a couple of repercussions to a point? It's not about following the trend. It's about staying one.
Well, you know, one of the things
that I think that the only thing that could be done, sister, is that just like we give white people, they take taxes out of our money, then we got to find one that we can give money to that would put money that will finance our health care, that will finance our schools and
yeah,
jobs.
Exactly.
This is what's missing.
Well,
see, I don't call this my government. It can't be mine now when Barack Obama denounced his own minister, then Minister Farrakhan, to be liked by white people. So this is not my government. I got to denounce my father to go kill for you, because I don't want to kill for you. You see what I'm saying? So now it's time. That's why it says, and if my children will call by my name, turn to me and seek my face. We got to turn back to our father. That was
at least in church, you can check off
where
you want the tithes money to go.
And we're bowing down to their father. We're bowing down to sticks and stones, crosses of white men and all kinds of stuff, and we ain't turning to each other. I met a sister one time. She said, I can't see myself bowing down to a black man. She didn't say amen. She said a black man. You see what I'm saying? I never asked nobody to bow down to me. That wasn't the teachings. But by talking to her, she wanted to give me a reason why she's not here or there. And you know, the thing she said, I'm not bowing down to a black man. That was heavy.
That's how
when
they're rushed to see ourselves
through
white people's eyes, you know, like we not worthy, you know. And we believe that message that they keep sending out. So, like, I believe what the brother said. You know, like in tithes or whatever, you check on where you want the money to go. We can't do that with the government. They just take our money and put it where
they
want.
It. That's
so,
right.
So what? You know, we make money. We got millionaires and black people.
Yes, we do.
You know, and they can get together and invest their money because one thing about black people, we spend money. We shop. So we are a very important thing financially to this institution. So
we
learned that with the bus boycott. They need our money.
Yes,
so
they
if we were to pool our resources, our money, they would listen to us. But
they
black people don't vote.
Right.
But
that's
the,
right,
the old people vote and women vote.
You doing what you individually can do. And eventually, you know how the power of human thinking is. And this particular rule is not about black, white, or any other color. Humans that are normally afraid or skeptical by nature, what's going to happen is if it's something that sounds great, but it requires some drastic move. Nobody's going to move until somebody has the guts to do it first. And then it's going to look like a trend, and everybody's going to start following. But it's not about one person giving a damn about how everybody else is thinking at that moment. If they're affected by something, and it's bugging them to a point that, listen, now I can't
No, we were talking about groupthink. Like, all these black businessmen can come together. We
Indeed.
Have money. And they,
yes.
yeah, but everybody want to be in charge, though.
Brass,
they want to make Farrakhan an enemy.
Baseball players, all of these multimillionaire
exactly.
entertainers.
We got money.
Oh, they ain't got to give up all their money. All they got to do is put a couple of dollars aside.
Robert Townsend a few years ago got together
Hold
with some people
I'm
and started a TV station.
At once.
Robert Townsend started a television station in Atlanta a few years ago. He grabbed a couple and started the Black Family Network, and he grabbed a couple of wealthy people, sports people, and started a station. The same with Tyler Perry and Oprah, what they've done, you know, stuff like that. getting these networks together and stuff like that. Now, Puff Daddy, he's starting a network as well.
Yes, he is.
So this is what we have to do for empowerment and stuff like that. We have to take power. Like, you know, back in the day, we marched and stuff like that, but now we got to work from the inside. We got to get people inside of politics and making these laws. That's why the NAACP is still relevant, because if you change laws, you change people's minds, because then they have to do it. They have to stop killing black people. They have to, you know, give us a loan. They have to give us a house in their neighborhood, because it's the law. So I think NAACP still has a part to play in this, and I still think that we, as businessmen that make money, we have a responsibility to come together with
yes,
our money
do.
And affect
yes,
some kind of change.
Yes, we do.
We
now,
do.
Dink, you
wow.
just touched on a great point. So now here we go. We do. NAACP does have a job to do, because especially their acronym is all about colored people. So that's number one. Number two, black businesses do have an obligation to give back to those people who help create them and get them where they are. And they can't walk around, black businesses cannot walk around using the black business tag but not doing for black communities. So now what
exactly.
happens is, well, now what happens is, if we're walking around as black people, not getting black business, not getting the feedback or the give back of black business, but yet black is being used as that, and we're not saying anything, then, oh, well, we're rolling over to be victims.
That's why I said about Stephon Marbury. He was from Coney Island, and that's where he I used to work at. That's where his base had started at. Not inside the white man's mall. That's his mall. But he
okay,
started there in this community.
Stephon?
That would have been his base. He'd be strong today.
But you forget what happened with Stephon was this. Stephon did a great thing. He did a great thing in the middle of doing stupid crap.
No,
okay?
No, but listen, that's irrelevant.
No, but think about
well,
it.
What
think
I'm saying,
about it.
What I'm saying is that see, they was angry, the white corporate world was angry at him. So they had to get
no,
rid
I
of him.
That. Larry,
okay?
I get that,
but I'm saying this here. Listen to what I'm saying. His base should have been in his community where he lived at. That's where,
that's true.
Like Bob funded the store. His base is in Connecticut. But he got stores all around, but his base was Keystone Strong, and the stores out here bring some of the other dollars. You
Larry,
so the
he was
down here falls down, his base going to still be going strong.
Let me ask you a question. Let's say
okay.
he didn't go to a white mall. Let's say he went right there in the middle of the most ethnic community there was and started his stuff. Do you think, even now with what you just brought up, do you think that if Stephon wasn't busy getting in trouble on the vegetable floor, getting caught up with
no,
Isaiah Thomas cover
because
up
his security, because the security of the people at his base would have not... They would have messed
Let
with
me
him.
Let me finish my
See,
question,
He went out
sir.
There. He went out
allow
there with a light server.
Allow me to finish my question so you... Please allow me to finish my question
ahead,
so you can answer what I'm asking you. Besides all of that, okay, I said,
mm-hmm.
let's say if he did the right thing. He thought that I'm going to give back to my people. He created the idea for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say
right.
he did everything right, followed the proper protocol, but his
right.
business putting out a big, huge step. That was a big step to make.
Yep.
It was a great big step, but he was busy. Instead of being able to focus all his attention on playing a good game and following up on his business, he was busy getting into sports scandals. Think
yep.
real hard about it.
Yeah, okay.
So while he's getting into sports scandals, in the one place that he had the power to be anything, he got all of his leverage taken away and had people in the process of not helping him along because he's a black-owned business. That was his problem. He took away his own backup.
Well, sister,
in a sense.
You forget, you know, when you got your base, your base is just like you go home. You go home to eat, sleep, rest. Might do a little studying, but when you go out in the world, you go, you know, ba-da-da-da-down. But as long as you got a base to come back home, regardless of what happened out in the world, your base is your security. You got your family, your close family there, your in-laws, and your extended family. You got to have your base. He didn't have
like,
a
like
base.
Like Michael Jackson, when they got in trouble, they were
oh,
the white people.
On.
When they got in trouble, they came
hey.
Back to the black base to get them out of that
yes,
lawsuit.
Yes, he did. He came to Al
he came, Shopton. He came back home, didn't he?
Yes,
you know what
he
mean?
Did.
Well, one of the things we have to look at, brothers and sisters, one of the things we have to look at, and I've been just sitting here, like I said, I'm quiet, but I'm taking notes. I'm sitting here just jotting a few things down. I want to just try to just throw a few parts in here. One of the things that we might need to look at is we may need to look at how we're going to get that black dollar pumping in our communities. We have to look at the fact that right now, we can start
right now,
something right now in terms of the, you know, Black Friday is coming up. But we can start right now posting and writing blogs and things of that nature and telling people about the importance of not spending their money on Black Friday.
Yes, sir.
To boycott Christmas. If we're not happy with the way we're being treated, why are we funding these corporations that continue to mistreat us? I mean, we keep buying Coca-Cola products. We went on board Skittles. And all these people were funding the George Zimmerman defense trial, defense case. So, you know, we're looking at those things. We need to start looking at black banks. There are several black banks, or hundreds of black banks throughout the country.
Yes, sir.
And we need to start looking at the black banks so
yes,
that
sir.
We can start getting our money and building our infrastructure through
that's
them.
Right.
There
that's
is
right.
an application that you can get either on Android or you can get on your iPhone called Around the Way. You listen to me, Around the Way. And this is an application that's linked to Google, but it's linked, it has all the black businesses in your community. And if you don't have a black business that's listed, you can actually post the business in this application. So we need to do that because we need to get to the point where we're doing some aggregation, where we're we're pulling our money and putting our money together. There's no reason why we can spend money at the liquor store, but we can't spend that same money to buy our blocks and buy abandoned houses in our neighborhoods because
right.
if we look around right now, we're being gentrified out of our neighborhoods. It's happening really quietly. So that's something we need to address. One of the things that you guys brought up was the fact that we're going out there and we're funding all of these corporations. We're funding all of these big-name companies. And that's because we have a culture of self-hate where nothing we do is good enough for us. Nothing we produce is good enough for us. So we look for every excuse to say, I'm not going to go to the black man to get my business. I'm going to
yes.
go to the white man. I'm not
yes.
going to go to the black designer to buy my clothes. I'm going to go to the white designer.
Yes.
I'm going to find everything wrong with her because we have been taught, and understand, this is scientifically and systematically done.
So
this is not just happening within the community. It's happening to the community. So we have to recognize
years.
That we're not just injecting ourselves in a poisoned environment. There are people adding poison to our environment, pitfalls and traps. So we have to recognize that. We also have to recognize that we cannot be satisfied with the gangs through the system of white supremacy. We will never, as you brothers and sisters have been saying all night, we will never be able to sit at that table of white supremacy.
No.
I say we get our own damn table and we sit at our own table in our own
right.
house, in our own communities.
That's
I have
right.
no desire. I moved out of white communities to move back to North Philadelphia. I'm right back here.
And that's a good point wherein stop being reactionary. We only react when one of us get killed, then black people come together, or when something bad happens. Be proactive, like this brother is saying, and get our own. Because like, if we wait for white people to beat us up or kill us before we come together, that's a bad situation. We should be planning and have a plan like Tavis and them do once a year. They do Black America, the consciousness. Where are we at as Black America? What is the agenda of Black America? Do we have an agenda? You know, we know our education. We know about getting incarcerated more than everybody else. We know we dying closer than everybody else. We know we need education.
That drugs are dropped off in our community more than anybody else.
So what is our agenda? What do we want as a people instead of waiting for another Trayvon to get murdered or whatever, and for us to come together, or another Haiti to happen? What do we want? We need to have that. Talking about groupthink, not just I. Get rid of the generation I and say, now as a people, what do
yes.
we want? What is our agenda?
Well, Cory Booker will have on the 31st August.
Well, that's what's up.
New Jersey.
Hey, that's right.
Don't forget him. But first,
guys, let me ask
African
you a question.
American.
Let me ask you a question. Think real hard about like our greatest achievements in Black history. Malcolm X didn't sit around that whole entire community. They didn't sit back waiting for people on the outside to give them anything. They didn't wait to be at the white supremacist table. They fought against it, and they still empowered us. So it's those type of things.
But you know what Malcolm X had to deal with? He had to fight against his own people. They was fighting, and that's the same thing that's holding us back now. We got to come together with an agenda because they fighting against who's going to be in charge. Like, you know, is the Christian Christians going to be in charge? Are Muslims going to be in charge? Is the senators or, you know, we
that
still got
African.
How
about
people
stop caring
about
African.
And you know what, brother? And you know what? White people, they got all their religion, they don't have no problem sitting down at the table. Cuomo gave that man that's running for the mayor a job. He was a Republican. The white people don't have that problem, who they are. That's one thing Malcolm X said to us. He said, put your religions aside. We come here for one common. Put that religion aside, because that's what messing us up today. Before
right.
we came into slavery, we was on Africa on one continent, and we wasn't going through this trials and tribulations until it was busted up. And now today, you got a black Christian don't want to talk to a black Jehovah's Witness. A black Jehovah's Witness and black Christian don't talk to no black Christian because that's a Negro religion. I mean, we just crazy out of our brains. So we got to push that religious aside because white people don't got that problem.
The religion is the righteous thing. That's deep right there.
They don't have that problem. They don't have
religion
that problem.
Is about making everybody's personal vendettas or personal actions be justified by using the one book. One of the things that I'm saying is, as a people who are going through hell, who have, like you said, Dean, reparations still have to happen for black Americans.
Chinese
people have gotten their reparations. The Holocaust people have gotten their reparations.
That's
Italians,
true.
Movies, black people still to this day, it's a fight and a half.
And Barack Obama told the black community, don't ask him about real because he ain't going to touch it. See, that's what we got to look out for. That's why I'm not into much politics.
Okay, well, I thought we stopped. Listen, Barack Obama's going to be out of office in a year or two. Okay, what we're saying is everybody keeps looking about what is down the line or who's got more on their grasp.
You know what I want, sister? I want land. First of all, the Indians, this land belongs to the Indians. Let me finish speaking.
I'm sorry, but I was not finished, and you got to give me a second, okay?
Yes, okay. That's how you do. I like black women.
Okay? No, it's not about being a black woman or not. It's a whole show that everybody has a viewpoint, and you cannot interrupt while somebody's making a point.
I apologize.
Okay, I know, sir. You've been very, very okay for now, but I just need to let you know. Everybody, this is our problem, and Carl, you've been through this, so you could tell me if you agree. We can't go down to a place where we need to apply for benefits or something like that and get one of our own who's in a title and treat us worse than the enemies do. Okay?
I'm not talking about going back to some places. I said land of our own.
No,
I didn't say go back to Africa.
You didn't even let me finish what I was saying once again. What I'm saying is our problem is we fight ourselves, and while we're fighting ourselves, we're too busy not empowering ourselves because we're too busy worrying about what somebody else already has instead of doing what you can, what you have, and working from there.
Oh, naturally,
That's exactly it. You want land, then guess what? Get your behind in books and go figure out where real estate is, what the programs are for people who don't have the ideal millions to drop on a table at one time, and figure out how you do it. If you're not working with the minimum right now, work to get the minimum and then start going from there. This is the problem. Everybody's sitting back going, I want this, but I'm not moving because they're never going to let me get it. They're never going to let me do it. You know what? They are letting Arab stores come into your local neighborhood and not let you in to shop fully in a store after midnight, but we're still going to their windows at 2, 3 in the morning and giving them our money. We are not able to go into a Chinese restaurant that we've been buying from for years and be short a dime and get away with it. They won't let you do that.
No, they won't.
But we still go there and order chicken fried rice and do whatever. None of us are sitting up there saying, wait a minute. I don't sit here blowing up your store or dropping garbage on your floor. Why am I being treated like a rat? None of us say that. We're too busy going, white boys will never let us get us anything. So do what you can do with what you have.
No,
be that person to be a person who can enable somebody else.
No doubt.
Is it
going to
be easy? Hell no. Hell no, it's not going to be easy.
No, one of the things I saw is
a people without land will always be a slave to the landowner, and that's what I'm saying. We, you know, I'm not talking about going back to Africa. This earth is 196,940,000 square miles. The total population only covers 29 million square miles. So there's a lot of land out there that we can get to. You know what I'm saying? And if I got to give this devil $3 billion, I want to find a way to get $3 billion to get out of here. And those who want to stay, stay. And those who want to go, we go. Just like with Moses leading people out of Pharaoh. Out of Pharaoh's hands, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about going back to nobody else.
Because
if you're tired of being enslaved to somebody else, what the hell are you going to do about making a difference for you? I'm not speaking to you directly.
But can I say this, though? It can't be individual. It has to be village mentality. It has to be
right,
one person can't do it.
Like the brother was saying, we got Cory Booker
in office. He can do some stuff on that part. And then we can got when we got a millionaire athlete, they can do something on
Thank
that
you.
Part. And
there
then on my street, in my neighborhood, I can
there
do something
go.
On that part. But it has to be a village because we came
that's
up
right.
in a time where the village
a
came
village
together and looked out for our children.
But a village doesn't get formed without one person making that first step. And I don't know how else to put it.
But sister, can I say something? Can I say something real quick?
This is going to be great.
I read about y'all, a sister I met in Roseland, she gave me information, and I didn't know, and I saw y'all this Wednesday, in the final call. And you should, I don't know, did you hear the message at Tuskegee, Alabama, on the anniversary of the Million Man's March? That was one of the key notes that was dropped down by Ishmael Muhammad, the next God in charge, because Farrakhan stepped back, is that we need 100 million acres of land. And we are looking forward to bring about, and he is looking forward to us to bring about a way to bring about this money to get there. So it's not just me alone, sister. I can't do it alone.
No. Listen, you make a great point, and we do need to amass those things. But we have to start small because
if I had $3 billion, it would be no problem.
It wouldn't be, but now what do you do when you have the problem? That is the point.
Can I say something? There's no problem too great that we cannot solve. Check that out, what I'm saying. There's no problem too great that we cannot solve.
Indeed.
Let's look at it starts with one person to make that we.
It starts. Everybody can't sit there saying that they're never going to let us. Because you know what?
Lay it up for them. I know who they are. I was talking to this brother came to me one day. He said, yo, man, I heard this white rap group. They rapping about saying the word nigger. I said, man, I don't care what they say. But when you walk through my neighborhood calling me a nigger, when you walk through my neighborhood carrying a gun, that's when I wonder why. I don't care what the snakes out there. They knock on my door, I'm going to eat them up if I can. I don't fear them. Because I've been, 400 years of slavery, so now I'm a pussycat? But yet you want to give me a war uniform and say, go kill my enemies in Iraq? But I can't kick your ass here in New York? I can't live like that.
I need to give the mic back to our speaker, so go ahead, call.
Thank you, sister.
Go ahead.
No problem. You brought up a great point, and we have to first learn how to address the N-word in us. And I try my best to stop saying it. So we have to try to address it because we have to kill that person to move forward.
Yes, sir.
And one of the things that I do when I go and talk to the kids, children, because kids are billy goats, and I don't want to associate our children with those.
Thank you, sir.
One of the things that I try to do when I talk to our younger brothers and sisters is instill a sense of pride and ethics in them. I try to talk to them about calling each other brothers and sisters instead
yes,
of the N-word and the B-word,
right.
Because his words are powerful, and we look at each other and we perceive these as to how we actually are, based on the way we talk to each other and we treat each other. We
yes,
breathe
sir.
Hate into existence when we call ourselves that. We breathe incompetence into our existence when we say those things. So
yes,
we have to make sure that we address that in our youth. We get our youth to understand that they are our future. See, that's the building blocks. See, our generation is to the point where we're still struggling with changing mindsets. We can still foster this mindset of working together, of networking, of building your community from within, not always getting your money and running out to the suburbs, not becoming a part of this boule caste system that tears down your community or keeps your community, keeps the foot on the throat of your community. So we can address that. We also need to be sure that we continue this message, that we not only continue this message, but that we embody this message. Next week, and I just want to make a few announcements because I know we're running out of time. Next week, I'm going to be at South Philadelphia High School on Thursday. Let me see the date. Thursday.
That's October 31st.
This Halloween. How ironic. I'm going to
be
down there.
My birthday is the 30th.
And I'm going to be down there from 10 to about 3 o'clock, and it's going to be a lot of scholarship going on with the students and staff. And I believe they're going to invite me back the next week because they want to have me in there for their professional development for their teachers and staff members. So there's going to be some real game kick that day, believe me. I have a DVD out we've been talking about this a little bit. My DVD is titled What About Us and What the Verdict Meant for Us. Now, the origin of that DVD, the title was actually a workshop that I put together after my cousin was murdered here in the streets of Philadelphia by a youth, and I wanted to address the youth. I wanted them to address their sense of morality and their moral codes and conduct and their sense of self-love versus self-hate and the hatred within the community. So that's how that title was formed. You can check me out at my website, www.wauwhataboutus.com. That's www.wauwhataboutus.com, where my DVD is showcased, but also we're going to be working with Katie, and we're going to be doing some collaboration in terms of getting the word out and sharing this information and working together. You know, sister, like I said before, I truly appreciate you. I appreciate Mark for bringing us together so we can work and collaborate and work on this project, and we can continue to work on things so that we can put some uplift into our community, so we can put some boots on the ground, and so that we can motivate everyone, including ourselves, to continue to build our community, not just here, but the whole diaspora, the whole African community worldwide.
Yes,
we need to do that so we can work together. So one of the things that, and I'd like to personally thank you for inviting me on the show. I'd like to thank all the panelists, too, because your input was vital, and it's definitely something that I'm taking notes on, and I'm going to put forth my next lecture, which should be coming up in about a month. It will likely be at Black and Nobel, but we're still fishing out a location. But it's going to be about port etiquette and addressing the etiquette of our community, and just like the topics we're talking about now, buying black, being black owned, buying back our communities, taking over, working together, building that trust within our community, overcoming the psychology of self-hatred. All those different things are going to be topics that we're going to talk about and addressing, because it's not only about identifying what's wrong, it's about building us back up so that we can be a mighty nation again.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so very much, sir. We are down to our last 4 minutes. So I do want to thank the panelists. Larry, you've been very, very animated and intriguing. Thank you, Dean, even though he logged off. Thank you to Gail. Thank you to Mark. Thank you, Rod. Is he still there?
Hello. Hey, I'm still here.
Thank you, and you were listening, and I was trying to get to you, but everybody got, animated. But thank you very much for your constant support. I want to thank David Billings from the Real World Blackness and Discussion Group, because behind the scenes, he's always letting me know he's listening from the chat room, and he tells me all the time how great things are. To Linda Miller, to Gwen, to all of you over there in that group, thank you very much. Mark, can't thank you enough, sir. But all that you do.
Keep on doing what we're doing.
Yes. Well, I'm going to keep trying. It's not about trying to invoke anybody's hatred. It's about invoking knowledge and empowerment. We are going to try everything we can within the powers that we've been given to do it. As long as I got breath, I will. I thank every one of you out there. Once again, happy anniversary, 17th anniversary, actually, to
Marlon and LaShonda Mosley. That is definitely one great thing I like to see. The iconicism of, you know, black love being strong for years. I thank you very much for being our friends. And thanks to all of you who have brought up our listenership to 14,457 people. I want to thank all of you very much for that. Continue spreading the word, please. Thank you, Carl, for being here, Professor. Wonderful speaking to you on both ends. And us as a people, we have to stop trying to accomplish the big pieces of the pie and start working from our slice at the table. We've got to utilize it to its maximum. We have to stop complaining about what we won't be able to do and start working on what we can do. We have to stop the internal hatred to one another. We have to stop giving other people the right to ridicule us and to stomp down on us and start using the natural resources, the natural resourceability, the natural persistence, resilience that we have been having from the day we were created, and put it to use for us. Stop being reactive and be proactive.
Yes, ma'am.
I want to thank all of you, and once again, everyone on this panel, thank you very much. We can agree to disagree, but we can also respect each other in the process, and respect is where it's at, and it's due first before it's not due. So let's do that first. So until tomorrow night, guys, with the Saturday Spread Your Wings Showcase, be blessed, be a blessing, make a difference. Reach out to us if you have any community topics, if you want to showcase a product such as Professor.
Okay.
The same thing happened last night.
Okay, have a good night.
Yeah. I guess she'll be back on in a second.
Somebody tell a joke to fill the last minute.
Two guys walk into a bar. Well, brothers and sisters, thank you all, you know, for your input. And I thank you for allowing me to impart some things, and I've taken more of them than I've imparted.
On the Edge. Real talk about real issues.
Hello?